Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm joined by Megan Vernon. Welcome to the podcast, Megan.
Thanks for having me.
So Megan Vernon has been living off of reader tears since she wrote her first short story in 2004. She now spends time killing off fictional characters, pretending to plot while she really just watches Netflix, and she tries to do all this while her two young children run amok around her Texas ranch. You can stalk her, or find her rather, online at all of these fun and happy places. And then we will list all of the fun places that you can find Megan online in the on the shelf show notes. So before we talk Good Directions, which is your newest release, we're going to get to know you a little bit, okay? All right. What initially drew you to the romance genre as a writer?
So I will say I've always been a reader. I think everyone says that. They came out of the womb reading. I actually, my aunt had V.C. Andrews books in her basement. I was younger, and that was my first foray, which I don't know if they're really considered romance, incest maybe, but
I mean, I think they are, but they are something, that's for sure.
And this was late 90s, early 2000s. So I got really into romance then. And there wasn't a big young adult section either. So by the time books like Harry Potter came out, when my classmates were reading those, I was like, I'm already moved on. I was reading Carly Phillips and Nora Roberts by that time. So I just naturally gravitated to that.
Yeah, I was, I remember, so when I was in seventh grade, I don't know why I remember this, but they had started this like accelerated reader thing where you had to like read a book and then take a test about it and you got like extra points. And there was a Mary Higgins Clark book on the list. And I was like, oh, I have that in my house. I'm going to read it and then take the test. And I totally did, which because my mom was a big romance reader. She got the Harlequin boxes, but she really enjoyed like Mary Higgins Clark and Carol Higgins Clark and the Braun, her last name is Braun, but it's like the cat, like capers.
Yes.
So my mom is a big reader also. So, but yeah. So what made you push publish that very first time?
So it's actually, I didn't know anything about indie publishing in 2010. And I met, Fritz under Genevieve Jack. Now at the time it was GP Ching. She was doing young adult romance. I was going to Romance Writers of America meetings when I was living in Illinois. And I was like fascinated that she and these other authors decided to self-publish together. And I had never heard of it even. So she actually, it was great because she took me under her wing and like taught me all about formatting, how to upload, like sat in her office for hours and she helped me get everything, like do it.
That's nice that you had somebody kind of guide you to it, because I've talked to so many authors who are like, I kind of just flew by the seat of my pants trying to figure it out, and they have so many things that they would do differently now, but it's nice that you had that at the same time.
I look back on that. I'm like, wow, that really was great.
Yeah. One of the questions I've started asking authors, especially authors that have been writing for a while, is what would you tell your past author self to do differently?
So a big thing that I think is helpful now too, you know, so back in the day when I first started self-publishing, because I started writing for publication in 2009, and everywhere, like it was blogs and Twitter that would give you advice. And they always said, write a different book completely. So I'd be querying one, and I'd had like three or four different book series started. So I wish instead of doing that, I would have just wrote the whole series before publishing, because it makes it so much easier if you already have it written, edited, ready to go.
Yeah.
Then, you know, four different beginnings of series.
Well, and it's one of those things too, like sometimes it's really like, if you're really in that like mode of like this world or these characters, it's hard to turn off of that and then go back.
So I was drinking water. Don't
Oh no,
talk all
that's
that much.
fine. Take your time.
You know, when you work from home, you don't talk to people much.
Yeah, I work in a really small office, like for my like second, like I have the office job and then I do like book stuff for like a secondary job, but there's only four of us in the office. And so sometimes, like, I don't talk to anybody all day, even there. So it's like I don't always work from the home and I don't talk to people. Although I do have to answer the phone sometimes, and that is the worst.
Previous life. This is how I used to write all my books. I was a claim representative for an insurance company. So you'd call if you had an accident in your car in Illinois, you'd call me. And that's literally, I wrote my books in between calls on my iPad and on my lunch break for the
Hey, you
first
got to
7
write when
years.
you can.
Yeah.
Do you have any writing rituals or habits that help you stay focused, or like a process? Because, I mean, there's pantsers and there's planners, and there's like a whole gamut of how people do those things. But what about you? What's your process?
I actually used to be a complete pantser, and then I started ghostwriting in 2020. So I became very into my outlines, even though my characters sometimes are like, we're not listening to your outline. So having that outline does help me. And I actually went on, I'm going to name drop here. I went on a writing retreat with Sarah Cannon. She actually just posted our 50-minute YouTube video of our writing retreat. And so I've always done sprints, which is where you do like a 20-minute timer and you write for that certain amount of time. So she said instead of having it like on a piece of paper where you're looking down, she puts it like a big sticky note and puts it on the wall to write down her sprints. And she said there's something about looking up and seeing
Instead
that.
of down.
And like I've been doing that the last since we came back, the last couple of weeks, and it has really just helped looking up and seeing my numbers up there.
I wonder if it's because it's like the different perspective, it kind of throws you like back, like really into like that focus, like because you're looking for something specific.
I recommend everyone do it.
Hey, whatever is working. And that's
But
the
you.
thing too, like I've talked to a lot of different we have talked to a lot of different authors since the like I joined the podcast, and it's like it's so fascinating to me, and I tell this to like almost every author that I talk to, like how different but how similar everybody's process is. And it's like one thing works really well for somebody and it doesn't work for somebody else, but this piece of a process works for this and this person, and then this piece works for these people over here. Just there's so much like mishmash to it.
You do, everyone has a different process, and I don't guess yuck everyone's yum isn't the right word, but it's a, if it works for you, it works.
I agree. I mean, you find what works for you, and if it doesn't work, you adapt and change, and then you keep on doing it. So, are there any challenges you find like you face like when you're writing, and how do you overcome them?
So I think some of the biggest things I have is just keeping my mojo while writing. So I started a group for us writers called Writers Mojo Dojo Casa House.
I love that.
Because I think like even when I'm writing, like you just like there could be a day where just sales are down or you couldn't write for a couple of days because you were sick or had sick kids. And it's hard getting that mojo back. So I found having that group helps me. And I also the last couple of years, I've read more, which I remember my creative writing teacher in high school saying to be a great writer, you have to be a great reader, which I think as we get busier as authors, we stop reading. So I make it a point every morning I read at least 2 chapters of something and then, go to writing. And if that still doesn't work, I go to my writers group.
How do you like keep yourself to just 2 chapters, and you're not like, oh, just one more chapter, and then the next thing you know, it's 4 hours later and you finished your book?
It depends because that has happened before. So my daughter's 13 and she bullies me into reading what she's reading. So yeah. So like then she'll ask me, she's like, did you get to this part yet? Like, don't give me spoilers, child. But so I'm like, okay, I'll read at least. So with One of Us is Lying, it was the three books. I'd like it was hard to put down, but I'm like, all right, if I get now, instead of like, I used to have goals of chapters each day or writing. Now I do sprints. So I'm like, okay, if I get 5 sprints, I can do whatever I want then. So
I mean, that's a
it's
good plan.
like, all right, you read your 2 chapters, get my 5 sprints, then I could read the rest of the book.
Oh man, I wish my 13-year-old wanted to read like that, but he has no desire to read any books. He just wants to play on the Xbox and do all those sorts of things. But
That's my 11-year-old. My 13-year-old, though, is such a big reader. We are actually going to North Texas Teen Book Festival tomorrow, too. That's in
ooh, that
Irving.
sounds fun.
Yeah, we're going to see Julie Murphy's there. I'm excited. R.L. Stine is going to be there.
Are you serious? That's so
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah. That's what I was the most excited for. And she
Oh
loves like
man, that's
Stephanie
awesome.
Garber with Who Wrote Caravelle, Jennifer Lynn Barnes, Julie Murphy. Like there's a whole bunch, and it's free.
That's awesome.
It's a whole
I
bunch of
would totally
authors.
go just for R.L. Stine as well. That's so cool. My 11-year-old, ironically, like I have a 13-year-old and 11-year-old also, but my 11-year-old, like she is a big reader and she's really into the Nate books right now, like 5, 6, 7, 8, and she's kind of really disappointed that the next book isn't out yet because she's finishing book three. And I'm like, I don't know when we're gonna get it. You might just have to wait. She's big into Harry Potter, and that's the only thing she wanted to read for the longest time, but she finally like found these other books. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Oh no, it's only three books. But it's okay. We'll find her something else. She went through her babysitter club phase, and I'll figure something out for her.
So knows what my 11-year-old read, and then we watched the TV. She didn't like the movie because it didn't follow it, but the TV series follows it very well. And season two is coming out.
No, yay.
Yeah. We're a big reading household.
I mean, my husband is not a reader. I am a big reader, and so like she gets it from me. And like I said, his parents were not readers, but both of my parents were. So it's like you definitely see the trade-off there. But anyway, back to the
Back at books.
interview. So romance in itself tends to have like big emotional arcs. How do you, as a writer, balance the relationship between the hero and the heroine, or the hero and the hero, the heroine and the heroine, but the main characters, however many they may be, and the other elements of the story?
You know, that was something, especially with name dropping by book, Good Directions, because this book is more fluff. There isn't like a big bad guy that comes down. And I think that was something that was hard, especially the world's crazy right now. So sometimes, and I think that's one of the things about being an author is, you know, and I get it, and books are political too, but sometimes we do just want to escape. So balancing that, I have to kind of, the characters talk to me, which, you know, any author who says the characters don't talk to them are lying. So they sometimes just tell me where this is going. And it's also a great thing. Like the biggest thing is being a writer. It's a lonely job. So I say I don't talk much, but I do have writer friends who I need to message with. Like I'm like, I don't know what's their conflict. Like they're not telling me. And so like sometimes we just need to talk it out with the writer friend. They'd be like, well, she's like this. And this is why it's like this. I think it was actually Becky who hosts this podcast was saying, or just Be well, Becky's with Bookcase. She goes, you can't put more inside a junk drawer. So two like messed up characters, you can't put two things inside of a junk drawer. It's just going to get more messed up and you can't open it.
Yeah, I mean that's true. That is one thing, like I've read a couple books where they're just so it's just messy and not in a good way, because I do like a messy book, but like there's just so much to unpack and it just does not work or make sense. So and that is something that I give a lot of authors credit, is like it is really difficult to find that balance of like what kind of chaos can you give these characters while making it realistic at the same time, but also creating this dynamic story.
Yeah.
So how do you handle romantic tropes and cliches, but also trying to keep your stories fresh and engaging?
A good trope. Like some people will say they hate the pregnancy trope. Like my favorite trope of all time is waking up accidentally married and she's pregnant.
I love
Like,
an accidental marriage. A wake up married is like one of my favorite things in the world.
wake up married and pregnant, you're like, boom. So I kind of put the voices aside because I think, I don't yuck anyone's yum. And sometimes I think that I won't like a trope. Like I've been reading a lot of Kayla, I think it's pronounced Grossy, Gross.
Grossy.
She's got like some crazy tropes in her books, and I'm like, I don't think I'd like this. And then I read it and I'm like, oh, I like this. So I think it's a lot of figuring out what I do like and how to spin it my own way. And then convincing people like you actually like them.
Yeah, I have found like the more that I read, like I used to have, and I've talked about it on the podcast itself, but like I used to have some hard no's, like things that I would never read before. But like the older I get, the more I'm like, yeah, I'll give anything a try. And I went down this rabbit hole, and Becky totally called me out on it the one day, but it was this like trad wife cheating book. It was so bonkers and bananas. Like she, like her persona is like this trad wife on like the TikTok, and like so she really like she has like a brand and a business and all this stuff, and her husband like cheats on her, and then and then so she cheats back, and then they go on this family vacation, and she invites the mistress, and it is bonkers, but I couldn't stop reading it. But like before, like I used to be like, I will never read a cheating book. I cannot do it. But man, I was sucked into that chaos.
Still will read every single Ice Planet Barbarians book, which never
I
thought
mean,
I'd love blue aliens, but
I do enjoy an alien. Well, and I like an orc, and I like there's
Morning Glory, Milking Farm, all of it.
A minotaur, perhaps.
And
Yeah, that's.
everyone is like poo-poos it, and then you read it and you're like, I get it.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it's one of those things because it's. I mean, they have feelings too.
The man has feelings.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, and it is like the older I get, the more I'm willing to really give anything a try, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds intriguing. I'm gonna give it a whirl, and sometimes it's successful, and sometimes it's not. But hey, but that is the wonderful world of books too. Like there is something for everybody. And that's the thing. Like we understand not every book is for everybody, but there is a book for everybody. Okay, so let's talk Good Directions. This is your newest release. It actually comes out today that we're recording, but probably not the day that the author spotlight is dropping. So just keep that in mind. So February 28th, 2025, Good Re Directions is released. The tropes are fish out of water, small town, single dads, like he's the guardian. There is a division of class. The book isn't super tropey though, so I was kind of like digging through the muck a little bit to like find the tropes. Like the ones that it is are very like out there, but they're you don't necessarily like force the trope at the same time. So I think it worked really well with that.
Thank
So let's talk Good Directions. So Hadley is the heroine. The book opens up and her dad is being arrested for a Ponzi scheme. Although I did enjoy the Fonzie scheme, like little addition there, and because I myself am a Fonzie fan. But yeah, so it opens up and then she and her mom go back to her mom's small town of Good, Arkansas. And chaos kind of ensues.
the
Oh.
idea of an Alexa, sorry.
No, your audio cut out just a second, but you're back, so we're good to go.
This idea came for the book. I wanted someone who is an Alexis Rose type.
Okay.
Like, what if she had to substitute teach? Because I used to teach
Okay.
and I have middle school children, and I'm like, well, you put an Alexis Rose type teaching middle school, and then I'm like, and I need a hot, like, everyone does a single dad, but I was like, he's going to be a single uncle who wears his ball cap backwards. Because
He
that makes a
does.
man hotter with science.
There's
Which,
just something about a backwards baseball cap that, like, really, it just works.
so my cover designer and I were working on the book, and I said, I want him in a backwards ball cap. But the problem with stock photos is every guy looked douchey. And I was like, he can't look douchey in his backwards ball cap. So that was something we really. So I have an ebook and I did a discreet cover. This is my first time doing the two different ones, but the ebook, it's him with his backwards ball cap and her. And then we've got like a scenery with a lake and the moon for the paperback, which will have stenciled edges.
I really enjoy the color scheme that you chose for that paperback because it's like it's bright, but it's light at the same time. Like it's not like over. I was an art major in college, so color is like a big thing for me, but it's like you have those bright colors, but they're also like they're not like in your face, like they're very calming and the blend is really good. I love that discreet cover so much.
Sarah Kill is great. We actually met because we're in a book club together.
Ooh.
And so I sent her, I was like, rom-com right now is all illustrated covers, and I didn't want an illustrated cover. It's like, I like the couple, and I was like, and I want a discreet cover. Like, and I just sent her some examples. She came up with the whole postcard aspect of it. Like, she came up with everything about it. And I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, I think it works really well, and it's one of those things, like it is one of those trends that are like really popular right now, especially like with the postcardy like side of things. And but it just worked really well. Like it just because some of the discreet covers and like the illustrated covers are just so out of touch with the book itself, but I don't feel that way looking at yours and then reading the book. So let's talk Jesse. So Jesse takes care of his nieces. 10 years ago, he was ready to go to college on a baseball scholarship, but his mom called and his sister had dropped both nieces off on her doorstep. So he just turned around, went right back home, and he's kind of stuck. But was there inspiration for Jesse? Like, where did you come up with his character?
So Jesse kind of came from not tragedy, but my mom had a heart attack, which his mom does, spoiler alert, year and a half ago, and ended up having open heart surgery. Like, and it was something where I had to go back home to help my dad take care of her. So it kind of came from that. Like, it's just, and I actually wasn't getting along with my parents at that moment, but like he came back and we kind of bonded again. So it came from that where it's that like bonding experience and taking care. And I really like my husband. He's a lot of Jesse inspiration comes from my husband because my husband is a girl dad. He's, you know, he takes care of things. He's not allowed to do the laundry because he's horrible at that. Like he does the dishes, like he takes the girls to softball practices and helps with the team. Like it's like I think that's hot. Like taking care of kids is hot in your
Yeah,
parents.
it really is like having like that relationship and like seeing him, 'cause like with my husband, like seeing him in his like parental element is very attractive.
Like, so their date nights, are they go and get pedicures, which is something me and my husband do with our
That's adorable.
kids.
I saw that in your like dedication and acknowledgments in the back. I was like, that is one of the sweetest things. 'Cause like as I was reading, it was like, that's really nice that like he has that like moment where he like really like enjoys spending that time with them, but it's not in the typical way. And then I saw that in your stuff and I was like, that is good.
Texas, I think they did this in Illinois too, but the place we go to that they know us now because we go regularly, they serve margaritas while you get your pedicure. And we're like, you know, we could go to a bar, we could go to a restaurant, but we get a couple hours where we get pampered and we get drinks. And the manager knows my husband now. So when he's in, especially when he's in with us and our two girls, he's like, do you want another drink? Do you want more alcohol in it, a special drink?
That's awesome. See, I live in Pennsylvania and we have nothing fun like that. So, but it's fine. I'm used to it. But so there, when they're meet cute, Hadley does not know how to drive. Her cousin is like they're driving home from Chicago because Hadley's aunt and cousin have one driven up to save them from like the chaos that is happening. And so her cousin Scarlett is like, I'm gonna teach you how to drive. And so she's driving down like a back road in like no man's land and almost hits Jesse and a runaway cow named Ida Bell, which is a top-notch cow name, I must say. But that's how they meet. But like, as she like tumbles out of the car, she's in this like couture, like princess, like costume, medieval. I don't remember how it was like a medieval like couture costume, which she's
It was
very
her
like.
mom's Met Gala gown.
But I just love it. And they don't exactly have the best like reaction to each other because he's kind of flabbergasted that she's so fancy in this.
So she's wearing that gown because her and her mom, so they've got the feds coming to take everything from them. So they decide to get drunk because what else do you do when the feds are invading your house and put on
I
all the
mean,
fancy clothes?
it's a natural reaction.
So she's got on, and then they get then the next morning, she's hungover in said fancy gown as he's picking her up. And I don't even know how that idea came to me, but I was just like, what's an out there meet cute that could happen?
Well, and it
And
kind of, but it like introduced him in like the way that he is, like he's a pet sitter who kind of like jumps from house to house, and this is like what I'm kind of talking about, like how he was stuck. Like he does his thing, but he's not moving forward with it. Like, and he's a little bit of a martyr, which is not a bad thing. And he loves his family, loves his nieces, he loves his mom, but like he has a really hard time like doing things for himself because like they need him, but they don't need him as much as he thinks that they need him or he wants them to need him. And that's part of the story too, is like him recognizing and understanding like, yes, they need him, but he has to do things for himself as well.
comes from my own Italian guilt, taking care of my mom. And it's a lot of where you need that other person that's like, you can do things for yourself too, and not be feel like you're just doing it for yourself, but you can take that time to do things for yourself,
Well,
work
and
on yourself.
Hadley, like, she's kind of been this pampered princess like her entire life. Like, she has known like no no's. Like, if she needed something, she got it. They traveled, like they were always wealthy. And so she's kind of had a fall from grace, but it's one of those things where she is such a nice person. And so the fall, she lands soft though. Like, it's not a hard fall for her. Like, yes, like the initial thing, it's tough, but like with her, when you first meet her character, I did not anticipate her being as sweet as she was. And I don't mean that in a mean way.
That actually, so Becky was one of my first like beta readers that helped with it. And originally, she was more like an Alexis Rose or like kind of snotty. And she's like, I think there's more to her than that. So that's where I went with the whole she loves theater and costume designing, which brought her down to a different level where she's not like wearing Prada. She's like, I made my own clothes with glitter because I love Xanadu.
Well, and I like that Xanadu like aspect to it too, because it was one of those things like her, like a lot of her identity, and not in a bad way, is like connected to the reaction she had the first time she saw Xanadu. So like her, and she went for costume design and costume engineering, and like, so she really loves what she does. Granted, girl is not making any money doing it, but she cares for it. And it's like she doesn't worry about like what people are saying, like the fact that she is sparkly and glittery all the time. And I think that was a big part of it, is like, yes. Oh, excuse me. Yes, she is in this world where like she's very affluent, but at the same time, like she is an individual.
Yeah, I love her for that too. Like, and I think it really, the more I developed her and Jesse, because at first I just loved Jesse. And I was like, she's just there to be Jesse's. And then I was like, no, I need to love her. And one of I came up with costume engineering because I was looking at random college majors and I found costume engineering. And there's actually a scene where like Scarlett goes, I thought you had an engineering degree. She goes, no, costume engineering.
Well, because the mom like told everybody she just had an engineering degree. And that's something too. I wasn't a huge fan of her mom's. I didn't like her.
I don't think we're supposed to.
She just was so there. It's not that she didn't love her daughter. Like, you got that she cared about her daughter, but she just was so like, I feel like she thought that Hadley was a frivolous person, and it really bugged me.
think it's the moms, wanting the best for their daughter, but moms always don't know what's best for them. And like,
Yes.
I'm from a small town too, so like, there's a lot of people, and I wanted to get out of my small town, like never return. Then I moved back to a small town. Now I live in an even smaller town in Texas. So it took me to getting older and moving back to that small town. But before that, like when we lived in a bigger town, I was like, I'd never do small town. Like, don't go for small town. Now it's so I think mom would come around again, maybe.
Well, and like as the book progresses and you get to the end, like they definitely have like those moments like that made me not dislike her as much, 'cause it's just like she is not a small town person. Like she, but I think she recognizes like her expectations for her life were not exactly how her life turned out, and she realizes that, and so she wants different for Hadley, which I also appreciate. So I did like her by the end of the book, but there for a while I was like, man, she's not a toxic person, but she's not super nice about things either. But
Husband singing in the background. Sorry.
oh no, I can't even hear him. You're good to go.
I'm just laughing. He sings made up songs a lot. Like, he's a morning person, and I try and be a morning person. Like, there's so much Jesse in him. Like, that's just, it's crazy. Like, as he's singing his made up songs right now.
Hey, whatever works. I am not a morning person. And actually nobody in my family is morning people, but everybody has to get up and, like early to go to school and to work, and it's like, oh, it is rough some days.
I took a cue out of my own life. So I used to have to take my daughter to elementary school, and I would have coffee in the morning, and she started asking for grumble grumble coffee, because she goes, when you get stuck in traffic, you grumble and sip your coffee. I'm like, yeah, I do.
I mean, that is fair. So I personally am kind of savage, and I will drive around with an open coffee cup, like a regular coffee mug, like in my car. And
Oh.
the other day I was taking my oldest to swim, and he's like, you need to move that, it's gonna spill. I'm like, I will hold it so it doesn't spill, don't you worry. But I'm like one of those open cup people where I mean, we have travel mugs, but sometimes it's a pain to pour it into the travel mug. And like our travel mugs don't fit in our coffee pot right. So like I have to brew it into a mug, and I'm not wasting my time pouring it into a travel mug. So I just, my grumble grumble goes with me in mug style. So.
Well, if you want to see how much of a princess I am, my husband makes our coffee every morning, and he pours it for me every morning. Like, that's his thing, his coffee every morning as he makes for me.
That is super sweet of him.
Yeah.
But that, like, so Jesse, like his one of his nieces, like she wants her grumble grumble coffee. And I mean, she's the younger one, and my youngest loves her coffee also. So it's, that's fair. But I did really like the dynamic of the relationship, which learning you have a 13-year-old and 11-year-old, those girls were your girls, are they not? That's what I thought. So what's next after Good Directions?
Some secret things that are coming up that I can't reveal yet.
Oh, secret things. Well, okay then.
And aside from that, I do have so it's in the middle of writing Rhett and Morgan's story,
Okay.
which may come out someday. It's so their idea was, I don't see enough of it, and it usually encounters cheating. Is marriage in trouble?
I love a marriage in crisis. Love it.
But instead of the marriage in crisis, I thought Morgan's been at home with the twins for 8 years. Like, she wants something different. So, and she's very natural. Like, they, she makes her own medicines and stuff. So she starts making sex toys in small town Arkansas to sell.
I am intrigued by all of these things, but I do. I love a marriage in crisis. It is very hard to get it right. So I'm super picky about them. I will say that. But I do. It's actually one of my favorite tropes. Like that, it, like if I find somebody who writes a good one, like Marie Johnston, I don't know if you've read her, but she writes excellent marriage in crisis. You
Check
should give
those
her,
out.
you should. They're really good. And she's a delightful human being too, which is nice. But So we have Good Directions that is out now, and it is in KU. You can find it in Amazon. I lost my train of thought mid like sentence there. I'm so sorry.
Everywhere, because that was published through Ingram. Now Amazon's not showing the right paperback cover, but it'll come.
It's okay. It'll all work out by the time this drops. Everything will be okay. So thank you, Megan, for joining me on this quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition.
You see me.
And until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.